Welcome back to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. On this edition, we sit down with DC artist Mike Norton and Chris Crank from Devil's Due Publishing. Chris and Mike are comic pros who also host their own podcast, The Crankcast. We'll talk to Mike about his work on the all-new Atom with Gail Simone and the book's involvement in DC's new weekly series, Countdown, and Loaded Bible, the action-packed post-apocalyptic showdown between Jesus and a legion of vampires. Chris talks about Pullbox Online, the digital comics distribution store he set up through Devil's Due, and his involvement writing a story for the upcoming Troma Anthology book of horror stories. With convention season underway, we'll talk about the difficulty pros have juggling work deadlines and the need to be out at conventions plugging their books. This edition of Word Balloon is sponsored by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com. InStock Trades offers a huge selection of trade paperbacks, hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more, all at up to 35% off with orders over $50 receiving free shipping. And don't forget to visit InStock Trades' sister site, Discount Comic Book Service, at DCBService.com for all your pre-order needs. Major publishers are 40% off, and monthly specials are 45 to 75% off every month. Visit InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com and Discount Comic Book Service at DCBService.com. For this edition of Word Balloon, we took our recording equipment on the road and visited Crank and Mike in the Crank Studios. It was a nice informal conversation. I hope you enjoy it.
You guys are transplants to Chicago.
Yeah.
And what do you guys think of Chicago? How long have you guys been here each?
I've been here a little over 5 years.
Yeah, same for me.
Okay.
I moved here right after Crank did. We all, I think Josh Blaylock moved everybody that he knew from their original states to come up here and work for Devil's Due. So instead of actually doing the cheap thing and hiring people that actually lived here in the first place, or the even cheaper thing and just starting Devil's Due in Cincinnati where he was.
Yeah, and that's, you go back to Cincinnati with Josh, am I right, Chris?
Yeah, we were working together a little bit before before Devil's Due became like a bigger thing, I guess. We were working because I was helping him. We met through friends of friends, and I was helping him with some website stuff for a book he was working on at the time that he was just self-publishing.
Do you remember the name of the book?
Back then, it was called Lil, like L-I-L, Lil Nasty.
Okay.
And that turned into Misplaced, which he did then publish and then published again, like a second volume.
Yeah, that's right. It was the same character, just different name, pretty much.
Yeah, just retitled it.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then... you know, we started working on that, and we had set up like a little web store to sell like T-shirts and stuff or whatever back then. You know, it's like 99, 2000, something like that. And then we got the G.I. Joe thing, and he moved out here, and G.I. Joe like hit pretty well at first, and you know, the rest is history.
That's cool. No, that's true. I think people forget that sometimes. You know, the foundation that Devil's Due is built on, and that started off as an Image studio.
Yeah.
And then obviously did so well that you guys were able to go off on your own. So, and you guys worked together, is that when you guys met, obviously, working at Devil's Due?
Me and Crank, yeah. I met him before I started there. Josh and I were friends before that. We're kind of like convention buddies, pretty much. You know, guys you only see three or four times a year. And I came up here to visit a couple times for those shows, and I would stay at his apartment or something like that, and I'd meet Crank through that.
Okay.
So that's how that happened.
So like Mid-OhioCon and stuff like that?
Mid-OhioCon, mostly Chicago shows.
I think I did meet you at Mid-OhioCon.
Was it Mid-OhioCon? Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that was easy for you guys because only an hour away.
Yeah.
And I, you know, everything's a hike from Memphis, so... I would just, whoever I could stay with, and I could... You know, Josh, when he moved up here, would let me stay at his apartment uptown, so.
You know, and we've talked a little bit about your work at Devil's Due before, Mike, in our previous interview, which is available. If it's not available, I got to get that reposted. I got to find that thing. So my computer ate a few interviews. I got to get Steve Englehart back.
That's an important one.
That really was. It was a good one. I want to talk about some of the stuff you guys are doing now, and I want to start, Mike, with you, because Loaded Bible 2 just came out recently.
Right.
And Tim Seeley's book, and for people who haven't read Loaded Bible 1, the basic concept is?
It's a post-apocalyptic world where vampires terrorize people and the Catholic Church has assumed power. It's one of those books that even when I heard it, you know, Tim has five ideas a day, like great ideas too, and he'll just and he'll just throw them out at you like a Hollywood producer. He's like, I got this plus this. How about that? And you're just like, yeah. And then you just go off and you do your thing, and you're just like, you never expect to hear about it again. And Loaded Bible was one of these ideas, which he's had actually for a long time before he even moved down here. He's had this is something he made up with his brother years ago. And I think the first time I saw it, he...
they had a short.
Well, they had a poster that they made of it. Like it was gonna be a movie. They made this when they were in like high school or college or something.
Are we burying the lead, by the way? We said the Catholic Church, but you know, isn't Jesus like...
Yeah, Jesus.
Yeah, the basic subtitle of the book is Jesus versus vampires.
Yeah, Jesus versus vampires. Exactly. So, you know, the action, Jesus is action hero. I'm all for it.
The first time I heard about it, I went to his apartment and he had a poster there, and I think it was his brother who was playing Jesus in the poster. I think that was him.
I don't remember seeing that.
Was it a drawing of, or
it's a photograph. It's like it looked like a little movie poster, and I was like, what the hell is that? And he told me the premise of it. I was like, that's pretty funny. And
I think didn't they have a short like in one of the Dead Dog things?
Yeah, he wrote a story, and
it was a comic book story.
I see. Okay.
And it was in a Dead Dog Comics who published Night of the Living Dead or something like that a while back.
Yeah,
he did a lot of work for them when he was in Minnesota, and they published a 5 or 8 page story that Steve Kurth, who used to draw G.I. Joe when it started, had done, and it was a very serious looking Loaded Bible, and it was very sci-fi. And Tim this, but he's going to know now. I never read it. Because I just got the Hollywood pitch. It was just like, you know, Jesus versus vampires in the church and in Mad Max world.
Pretty much, yeah.
And I was like, okay, that's all I need to know about it. And then he decided he was going to do this book, and he got Nate Bellegarde to do it, and it was great. And I didn't read it when it first came out because of that. And I read it, and I was just like. I've heard this response from a lot of people. This is a lot better than I expected it to be. You know, because you hear that and you think it's going to be like some stupid comedy thing.
Sure.
And it's not. There's actually like a sci-fi epic going on here. You know, there's actually some smarts behind it. And he got in a bind with the second one and asked me to do it. And I was like, sure, I'll do it. And I had a lot of fun. I mean, because... I was halfway trying to do what Nate did because he has a more loose cartoony thing going on. So I used it as an excuse to play around a bit. And Mark Englert, who really has this kind of old school finisher, not just tracer inking mentality, who I just loved working with because it was really that kind of psychic bond thing that you hope for with inkers that, you know, you get with like, Byrne and Austin and, you know, all these old-timey, you know...
Teams,
yeah. It's just like, I wish I had somebody that would finish that line that I haven't even drawn, you know? It's just like...
Who thinks like you.
Yeah, Mark Englert was like that.
Oh, that's cool.
So that was really cool to do. And I got halfway through three before my exclusive contract came down, and so I couldn't go and finish that for him, so...
Wow.
But that's being worked on right now. So
now something else you guys are working on in conjunction with Tim Seeley is the trauma anthology that's coming out.
Right, that's something I wanted to do. I was originally supposed to do the one that Sean McKeever wrote, but I wasn't able to do it.
You weren't able to do it, dude?
No, they got somebody else to do that. And
I was going
to
say, you know,
Crank
I know
Chris... wrote a story that.
Yes, please, Crank, tell us.
It's just the whole thing. The trauma anthology is for anybody that doesn't know what a trauma movie is. Toxic Avenger, Surf Nazis Must Die, Class of Nukem High, Kabuki Man, like all, you know, all these
Lloyd Kaufman
sub B movies,
right? Not B movies. These are Z movies. Yeah. They really are.
I mean, the truly low budget movies, not low budget like Hollywood style, where they only got like, you know, a mil or two to spend on something. But we're talking, and it goes straight to video, you know.
Yeah, we need a truck, like actually, so we're putting the truck driver in the movie. He's going to play a cop.
Yeah, like you right. know, it's something like people. Some of the stuff looks like people actually filmed it on camcorders, you know, things like that.
Sure.
Yeah. And not saying that they're bad. I mean, they're universally sort of bad, in a way. But there's like brilliance in some of them. Like,
well, they've become
Catgirls and Heat and stuff like that. You know?
And there's this cult following. And also so many people, much like the Corman films, got their starts in Troma Pictures. I know Kevin Costner is in...
Trey Parker and Matt Stone. Is that his name?
Yeah.
Matt Stone.
They
did
South
a Cannibal
Park
musical
guys.
And then went on to do South Park and all that.
There you go. I mean, yeah. So it's it is that kind of background. And people just love Troma and all understand that it's on a shoestring.
And it's just fun.
And I know you and Celia are huge horror fans, so obviously you guys are Lloyd Kaufman fans as well.
Yeah, and he's a really nice guy to meet, too. Like, even if he doesn't know you, he knows you. You know, like, he at least acts like he knows you. And he's, like, real congenial and always, like, the showman. Consummate showman, I should say. But so this anthology is basically taking it's stories based around those movies. Or, like, in my case, it was I mashed up two movies and had a – it was Rabbit Grannies versus Children at Play, which was Beware Children at Play, the movie. And so it's like cannibal kids versus these like demonic grandmas, you know. And and I just wrote this silly like 4-page thing for it. Where
who drew it?
That was
Josh Metters.
Josh Metters, yeah.
Cool.
Who's doing Chucky for Devil's Due right now?
Yes, indeed, absolutely.
And he's done a bunch of horror stuff and that. He's like you'll see him at the horror conventions, like sitting there just drawing out pictures of Jason and you know Michael Myers and things like that, you know.
Yeah.
And it was colored by I can't remember who. I'm sorry. Oh, wait, I got it over here.
Oh, cool.
But it was a...
Oh, great. Wow, look at this.
Pull out that.
Something only I can enjoy, unfortunately, because this isn't video. But...
There we go.
Chris has pages. Put down...
Oh, Andrew Ritchie. Yeah, that's who colored it.
Andrew Ritchie, ladies and gentlemen. And, this looks great, man. Truly. This is, like, very EC looking.
It is very EC looking. Metters has kind of got that...
Well, it didn't. I lettered the story too, so it doesn't. And I'm.
Well, that sucks. I'm sorry.
Well, you
had to find the flaw. No, it's very well lettered.
I'm looking at it from that standpoint of those old like you know Tales from the Crypt, where like just
exactly.
A woman's head screaming and a big you know coming off of it and stuff
yes.
like that.
Yes. No, this is and, dude, this is awesome.
So you know, and that was a lot of fun. I'm glad I got to like jump in on that. Yeah. But that's coming out soon, I think, like a month or two,
very
September
soon,
maybe.
Yeah, I figured for con season. I'm glad we keep bumping into the topic of conventions because later on I want to talk to you guys about conventions and various adventures and stuff because we're on the convention season. And also it's an opportunity to talk about things that are going on. I'm glad we've mentioned the Troma Anthology. Right. I wanted to talk, Mike, about The Atom because as con season progresses and countdown really starts to get underway,
right.
The search for Ray Palmer is one of the big stories. And
yeah.
Issue 12 just came out, of course, and that's you're on that arc. So what can you tell us? What can you tell us about the story?
Well, hey, for those of us who are dumber than others or less knowledgeable than others, who's Ray Palmer?
Ray.
Why are we looking for him?
Ray Palmer is the original, well, not the original Adam, but he's the second Adam. He's the Silver Age Adam.
Yeah, the Earth One and Silver Age Adam.
Yeah, he's the Adam that everybody knows.
He didn't die. He disappeared.
His wife went crazy, killed somebody, and he felt grief-stricken about it and just disappeared into nothingness, and nobody saw him for... It's been years now. So...
And that happened back in...
Identity crisis, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, 2004.
Okay.
So it's been a big mystery whatever happened to Ray Palmer, and now his replacement, so to speak, Ryan Choi, who is the star of that Adam book that I draw, is now on a quest to find him. And that's what issue 12 is about, that getting started.
And elements of the story are also part of one of the four main stories of Countdown
right.
that's going on now, which is the new DC-wide crossover event that's happening, different from 52. Now, it's a lot of issues reflect things that are going on within the month of what's happening in other books. And obviously, you're going to dovetail. You know, a lot of what you're doing is going to dovetail into Countdown.
Yeah, hopefully.
Well, that's what I'm curious about in terms of from a planning standpoint. Do you know what scenes? And I don't want you to go into specifics, they're going to use
that
in the book.
Is the thing. This is my first time ever being really part of a gigantic crossover, and as far as crossovers goes, you can't get much more gigantic than a weekly series that really affects your entire universe.
Yeah.
So right now, I'm a little nervous myself, actually, working on it, just because I'm not exactly sure what's happening next, and I'm not exactly I don't know I have nothing to compare this to, so I don't know if this is the right way that things are done or not. So I feel like a lot of the stuff they give to me on a need-to-know basis, you know what I mean?
Sure.
And so that I don't go on
a podcast
and tell people what's going to happen next, you
I
know what I mean?
That. That's all right.
Fortunately, like one of my good friends, Sean McKeever, is actually writing parts of Countdown, so I can go to him and talk to him about it. Like, what's happening with this? Because, you know, we're crossing over. Because he's writing scenes that have to do with Adam, and I'm writing and I'm drawing stuff
in the Adam book. Yeah.
Right. So
with Gail writing, Gail Simone.
Exactly. So I mean, I have that to fall back on, and you know, I can ask. You know, I guess.
Do you feel like you shouldn't though?
Yeah, but it's just like part of me is just like I want to find out for myself because you know one of the worst things about, I mean, if there is a bad thing about getting to draw comics is the fun of reading the comic is gone because you've worked on it for over a month. You know what I'm saying? So part of me doesn't want to find out what's going on. Like right now, I'm where I'm at. I'm on the last episode of the search for Ray Palmer as it exists in our book.
Okay.
And I still don't really know how it ends.
Cool.
So I'm kind of excited still about it.
It sounds like you get the same reaction that I used to get when I used to write for magazines in terms of when it was finally on the stands. Yeah, I mean, I didn't really need to reread it. I just needed to know, okay, it's out. Maybe check it for mistakes, and that was
exactly. Oh, I you know what? Right now, I just I'll look at my book once over to see if it printed right, and that's it. I don't. I can't stand looking at my stuff once.
Let's look at more of me. I know Chris, obviously, you know that you go through the agony because and it's in the intro, so don't worry. When you guys do the Crankcast.
Yeah,
you got to go back, re-listen and hash through everything.
Yeah, I don't actually really listen to much of the finished product ever.
There you go.
Like it was even with Little Bible too. I haven't actually read it all together yet because I was proofing the script for Tim, like you know ahead of time just to check for like errors, spelling errors and things. And I've read the script and I've seen all the art, but I've never actually seen it put together.
You're doing a lot of work in the background and stuff on a lot of books and you know in the production end. What do you do? And I don't mean that in a challenging way, because I'm sure Josh isn't listening. But what the hell do you do exactly, Craig?
Well, it's changed a lot over the years. I mean, when we first started out, it was there were only like a handful of us. You know, it was me, Mike, and Tim, and Josh.
Yeah, we wore a lot of hats back then.
We were basically the art, you know, like the entire art and editing department of the thing, you know. And I used to have to go through scripts and proofread, and spell check, grammar check.
Yeah.
You know, check for art errors. I used to have to correct a bunch of art, like digitally if I could, and that. And that morphed more into me settling down into I handle the technical back end stuff for Devil's Due now, like the website and the internal technical stuff. I still do, like, the odd art correction, you know, helping out with the art department if they get backed up or, like, assembly in the book, something like that. But mostly I'm doing tech stuff these days. So, I don't read a lot of the scripts ahead of time anymore, so it's not spoiled for me. Like, I didn't even get to see, you know, I didn't even read Storm Shadow until, like, it came out, until I got the copy that we got in the office, you know. I'm like, well, hey, this is a good book, you know. And pleasantly surprised because I hadn't been spoiled by seeing it for 3 months ahead of time, you know.
Do you think the digital side of what Devils Do does is becoming a more important component? Are you...
You talking about like the pull box and downloads and stuff?
Yeah, well, everything, and that's what I mean, in terms of promotion and as a way of getting to the public.
Eventually, because everything's morphing into you need to absorb more like outlets for promotion.
Yeah, platforms.
And
yes.
For delivery of stuff, you know, to get your stuff out there. And I mean, it's becoming more important, like, as people accept the new technologies more, I guess, or the new delivery methods. It's, I can't say it's, like, any more important than anything else.
No, but let's talk about, you mentioned Pullbox Online, and I want to talk about that because that's something that you've put together not only for Devil's Due, but you've also approached other creators who own their books. Mm-hmm. So describe Pullbox Online for people who don't know about it.
Pullbox Online is just a store, like a you know an online store or website that you can go to and buy downloadable versions of comics. We deliver those in two formats: PDF, which pretty much everybody knows what PDF is.
Adobe Acrobat.
And another format called CBR, which was initially used just by the people online that scan their own comics and trade them back and forth and all.
Sure.
That. And which I actually prefer because that's just a. What it is like it's a collection of loose images that are numbered sequentially so that they stay in order. and they're putting it like a zip or a RAR file, mm-hmm. and giving a new extension, and so that the programs that have been developed since to read those can like interpret them, and those are really nice because you can just crack them open and do whatever you want with them. Like they're really useful for the end user so that you can like view them how you want to view them.
Okay.
Whereas like PDFs are pretty much like a lot of people don't like PDFs because they're just kind of clunky and you know. Although there is I think it's called Foxit or something like that, which is a PDF reader that's a lot lighter than Adobe's Acrobat.
Lets you to do more flexible things with the PDF?
Yeah, as far as how you display it and things okay. like that. And loads faster, just a little bit lighter, stuff like that. But, so we offer both formats, basically, just for the more, I guess, the CBRs for the more, in quotes, advanced users or whatever. You know.
Are we closing in on a year with you guys doing pullbacks?
I think we opened our store in November and then officially launched in like December of last year.
Okay, so 6 months. Now, I've seen issues and the resolution is really nice and I think it does look good on a computer screen, but you mentioned how you all comics need to go to these different formats, and I said the word platform as well. And the thing that I think still needs to happen for digital comics, because I think it's a great way to sample something and if you want to speculate about buying something hard, but at the end of the day, I still want that tangible book. And it's interesting how we still feel that way, or at least I'm assuming that most of us feel that way, about comic books and regular books. But, man, I don't miss having to lug boxes of CDs and albums and stuff like that around.
I'm the same way.
And it's that platform of the MP3 player, which is nice. You can fit it in your pocket. Mm-hmm. It's very portable and stuff. I'm waiting for that portable reader that opens and reads like a book.
That's the one thing when when you get to a point where like you can really easily, I mean, just like iTunes, we'll take iTunes as an example because it's probably like the biggest, most well-known thing. When you get to the point where you can sit down at your computer, open up a program, access a store, that program grabs your thing and then puts it on your media device, and it's seamless, you know? When that actually happens, I think that's when it'll really take off. Because you'll have your little, paperback-sized e-reader kind of thing.
Exactly.
Or something like that. You know?
Yes.
Because, I mean, you can get by with stuff now. Like, I read stuff on my screen. I read stuff on my notebook. When I open up my notebook, I turn everything 90 degrees, so it actually opens up like a book, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, I do that, but still, that's...
Doesn't that make the gizmos inside run funny?
Yeah, everything kind of, it leans to the right.
All right.
But, that's clunky, and it's not, like, for everybody, you know?
Sure.
So when somebody, like, they've got the black and white ebook readers, and they've even got some color ebook readers now, and the price point's going to come down, but
how big is I've never seen them. I've heard guys talk about it, but I know you're a techie guy, so I'm like
those, not the smaller paperback format, but the
oversized
size,
yeah, the oversized soft covers,
paperback, yeah,
sure.
They're about that size,
okay,
more or less. And
okay,
they got a decent screen. It's probably somewhere around like maybe 6x9 ish, maybe 5x8, something like that,
yeah.
So, and they've got decent resolution. They're just right now they're still just hashing out like
how much do they cost.
I think the black and white one was somewhere around $600, $700.
So, yeah.
Which is, the price point's not
there. And it'll go down.
There.
I mean, look at MP3 players. I mean, it's, Jesus, you can get a good, decent one for under $80 now.
It's just one
if
more.
If you just want a gig or something, mm-hmm.
Once they develop something that people like and they get out in circulation, it's like any tech, once more people buy it, the prices go down.
Sure.
It becomes cheaper for them to make per unit,
Oh, yeah.
So, but I'm looking forward to that because, frankly, I just like having all my stuff on a hard drive instead of boxes and boxes of stuff.
Yeah, and I guess we'll get to that point, but that's why it's interesting, because that's the one thing that the comic book magazine and the trade book still has over digital is it just feels more substantial actually holding the art and really opening it up. And
I think another and this may be crazy, but I think another hurdle will be once we get over. Once our generation is out of the picture, it'll be a lot easier for that to become a commonplace item, because as much as I hate the giant boxes of comics sitting in my office, I cannot make myself get rid of them.
Yeah,
you know what
I've
saying?
Still got those 16.
Oh, yeah.
I had no problem getting
there,
rid of the CDs and all that stuff, but I can't get rid of the comics just because I feel this attachment to them. Well, it's something that kids that grow up on it, they're not going to have that. So that'll be. So I think the key is for us to die.
Thin the herd.
Yes.
Get out of the way.
Yeah, that's how technology will take over.
I think you're right.
And there's all kinds of ways these things can go. I mean, if you look at it like, sort of along the lines of what Carla McNeil was doing.
Crosby McNeil?
Yeah.
What'd she do?
Where basically she was publishing her monthly stuff online and giving it away. And then that was in sort of like Radio Play, how Radio Play drives album sales. She was using that to drive collected volume sales.
I think that makes a lot of sense.
There are a couple of books that are doing that now.
Yeah, if I were doing a graphic novel, I would put the first issue online free and say, this is what the story's about and everything. And then, yeah, if you really want to buy the rest, here it is.
You see a lot of people, I mean, Image does that now with their, I mean, they'll put a whole issue
entire
online.
Issue. Yeah.
And, yeah, so I'm not exactly sure what the stats are back behind that, so.
But, yeah, I mean, it's basically adopting, like, the Radio Play model, you know? I mean,
sure.
Because there were tons of studies that prove that Radio Play increased album sales. And so
absolutely.
They didn't have a problem with saying, okay, well, we'll freely play this thing on the radio, which, I mean, they did get some money back for play, but, you know.
Well, actually, it's funny. That only started recently because it was really more through publishing that, and that was what radio stations were having to pay. But now the RIAA, because of the amount of downloads, is going to radio for a similar license to, you know, pay performers.
Yeah, they recently crunched down on online stations too.
Yes, so I mean it's
with prohibitive fees.
It's that kind of tug of war that's going on right now that is keeping innovation from really taking over.
Well, and that's similar with what's going on with this. You're going to see stuff like SLG's doing it now. We're doing it. You've got the direct to drive. You've got drive through comics.
Yes.
You got Wow-I-O, which I think is
Mark
Miller's thing. Mark S. Miller? Yeah, it's Mark S. Miller's thing. And Mike Miller, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Mike S. Miller.
Okay.
And you got these people doing this stuff, and you know, you see sort of with Direct to Drive and that, you kind of see one of the big two like dipping their toes into it. And Marvel, like a year and a half ago, put out their like online survey thing asking how people would want to see this stuff. So, you know, they're thinking about it at least.
Oh, sure. You know, absolutely. Everybody's
trying to get into it.
Yeah, I think everyone's aware of it, yeah.
You still got to get past the fact that the basic question is, you know, what's going to happen? Like, well, aren't people just going to steal stuff? You know?
I guess that's the same problem that everyone that is putting out creative content is going to have to contend with and either accept or find a different revenue stream where it doesn't matter, you know?
But, you know, I mean, everybody's slowly moving into it, though. And it, especially in this past, like, 8 months, I think, that downloadable comics has been like the buzzword. I've seen it come up in so many articles, so many like things on Newsarama, CBR, you know, all that, you know, Heidi,
just
popping up everywhere. It's downloadable comics, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, it's just weird that all of a sudden now it's become everybody's attention.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, yeah,
it's the way it happens.
Well, and I think podcasts are part of it, and I'll use that to transition into talking about the Crankcast because I think the online community, which still is only a portion of the comic reading community, I think we're all aware of that, but it's nice to find this new interesting way of discussing the hobby and getting information about books and things like that, down to just you guys doing something with the Crankcast where comics comes up, and certainly you guys are from the biz, but I enjoy the show because it really is just you guys hanging out talking and... Really, it's the, you know, it's kind of that Seinfeld idea, and I don't mean from like, ooh, hello, Seinfeld, but I'm just that it's it's a conversation about nothing. You guys are just hanging out. You're talking about what you saw over the weekend. You're talking about TV that you like, movies that you like.
Yeah, I like to
whatever happened to you.
I like to cling to the fact that we're loosely a comic podcast, and we're not really.
the whole idea that we work in comics was kind of the excuse that we hang. For people to listen to the show, but really, I mean, what you mentioned, if somebody told me it's just two guys talking about nothing, I wouldn't want to listen to it either. and that's why, you know, I don't really, you know, it's not like I go out of my way to promote it either. I just, it's one of those things, it's kind of like, I don't know if you ever did this when you were a kid, you put your radio up to in my case, it was MTV, and they would play videos. And I'm up there pressing record to tape songs off of my television set.
You know, there's a million.
And I'm pretending to do it like my, and in between I'm doing my own radio DJ voice and stuff. I was like, who am I giving this to? This is just for myself. This is kind of what the Crankcast was, except for the fact that because we figure, well, we work in comics, we can go and pretend like this is a real thing and put it up, and people start listening to it. Like half of me, I mean, even on the show, I'll be like, what's wrong with you people? Why are you listening to this? But
Yeah, Mike likes to take the Wiener Circle approach to
the Wiener
customers.
Circle. I don't know if you've ever been to the Wiener Circle here in Chicago where they insult you for buying their food.
Give us your version, Chris. What led you to do it? Because you're the one who really started it, didn't you?
Mike made me.
Did you go to him?
I told him. Well, I mean, I don't know if he had you even listened to a podcast before I told you.
I was watching like Rocket Boom.
I mean,
Boom,
you
which was
obviously
a
knew what they were.
Yeah.
Because you're the technical guy.
But like most, you know, a lot of podcasts I wasn't, you know, I'd listen to like Fanboy Radio, which was a podcast before podcasts were called podcasts and stuff.
Right.
Like that.
Right.
You know,
Same here. It was hard for me because they used to charge and I wasn't exactly. I mean,
rolling in money.
Well, yeah, it's just like I'm not going to pay to listen to that. So I'd listen to their free ones that they'd have every once in a while.
Right.
And I was like, that's a really cool idea.
Yeah, you know.
But that was years ago that I heard.
Oh,
about
yeah.
That.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was like Scott, 2003. And,
exactly.
You know, yeah.
I think Scott even goes back to like 2001 or two.
Yeah, I would listen to those on occasion. Like, you know, if they were talking to somebody I wanted to hear about or whatever, you know. And I was watching like Rocket Boom and stuff, which was a vidcast. And
you're a big fan of Rocket Boom.
Yeah, I was up until the switch over.
Yeah, they changed.
Didn't really care much for it
but,
after that. But
isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting how they, you know?
Well, certain personalities grow on you, you know?
Yeah.
And that's part of like what you like about it.
Absolutely.
And if they change the characters up, then it's the same reason you drop a book if they change the characters up, you know?
That's true.
But I was listening to them. I think when the new iTunes came out and it had the aggregator in it.
Yep.
I just started looking for everything because that's all I do is sit at a table all day and draw. I needed to have something because I'm not watching The View, you know? It's not made for me.
Man.
Daytime
TV
is not made for comic book artists. I'm sorry.
I understand.
And I don't mean to offend the guys out there that are watching Judge Judy.
I was going
to
say, you don't like Texas Justice?
Yeah,
come on, man.
But I started, you know, downloading all this stuff and listening to it. And just like everybody who discovers something, they think they're the only person that's ever heard of it. And I was going around to everybody and say, God, have you heard of these podcasts? And I think I went up to Devil's Due. I asked three people to do their own show. I told Sam Wells because his wife is a sketch comedy person, and I said, you guys should do your own podcast. That would be really funny, and then I could listen to it while I'm drawing. You know, this is a great idea. And then I told Tim, and I told Crank, and Crank actually did it. Well, Crank, I told Crank, because Crank, I mean, look where you're sitting.
Mike, you're busy working. Chris,
well,
yeah, I'll do it.
You're in this studio right now, and Crank's got all this music stuff. He's always talking about recording stuff. I'm like, you can make your own podcast. You can play your music on your podcast. I figured he was going to do his own little music thing, but he was like, well, I'm not going to do it unless you're on it. And I'm just like, I don't know how long we thought about it. It took a while before we actually did anything.
Yeah, like a week.
No, it wasn't like that. Was it a week?
It was a week. And
a week after I mentioned it, we were doing a show? Because
I
have a hard time
believing
that.
And then we started doing it like a month later.
Well, I remember you emailing me and going, hey, don't be offended, but I'm thinking about like doing my own podcast and stuff. And I'm like, no, that's awesome.
Yeah,
man, do it.
Well,
that's great.
I did that with all the other podcasts that I listened to because I thought about it. And I was just like, well, who am I? I mean,
Hell are we?
Well, that's
what dawned on you.
Well, no, that's not at all. Because I would listen to it, and you know, to me, you guys are the guys that you know. You guys are the radio. It's like turning on the radio and listening to a show, and then saying, "Oh, I'm going to do that show tomorrow too," you know, and then. I mean, who are you? But in this day and age, you can be that person that does that, and it's silly and awesome at the same time. So
yeah, because I mean, I was working on like recording music and things anyway for stuff.
Sure.
So it was I think the only thing we added to the setup was we bought a couple of headset mics so we could pretend we were Madonna, you know?
Because we like to dance.
Even though loosely we're a comics podcast because we sometimes talk about comics and we work in comics, it's like. I'm glad we never decided to like try to do like we didn't try to do what you do because like we can't do that. We can barely talk to each other.
Yeah, yeah.
No, but it's definitely. I like when you guys have guests. It is a conversation.
Well, and that's the thing about that is like every time we've ever had anybody on, it's somebody that you know one of us at least knew really well. You know,
right.
So it was just like being able to sit down and talk over beers or something. You know, like,
right. Well,
and for some reason, I mean, we get a couple of people that you know listen to it. And,
well, I mean, like it.
It's
and I know a lot of other people like it too.
Well, it's fun for us. Obviously, we wouldn't be doing it. It's something different because I mean, the whole point behind doing it is, you know, he didn't want to be sitting behind a computer all day, and I didn't want to be, you know, I mean, I seriously spend up to, you know, 12 hours a day drawing sometimes, you know, and it gets a little grinding after a while, you know.
Well, that's one of the reasons, too, why I like something you guys do live, and Crank only comes every now and then, but you usually go in Andersonville, one of the Chicago neighborhoods. A bunch of the artists get together, a lot of the comic book artists from Chicago, and hang out at something very informal that Seeley and Scotty Young basically started. I guess Scotty really started it.
Scotty Young started. He started a drawing night. I mean, something. I mean, it's not exclusive to here. I mean,
no.
There are other cities that do this.
I know LA, Dave Johnson. You know,
Dave Johnson does
do
his, and I know they do it in other cities. And you know, Scotty's very much like me in that he doesn't. He rarely leaves his house. I mean, he doesn't have a car. I mean, he goes by public transportation, and he doesn't really unless he has a reason, he doesn't really go out and do stuff. And I'm sort of the same way. And so he got just really itchy and said, "Hey guys, let's all meet weekly and do some drawing. And
step away from the drawing board at home.
Yeah, and go draw somewhere else." Well, which sounds ludicrous, but it actually is. I mean, you socialize, you hang out and. And
art's fun again, as opposed to it being just work.
Exactly. Well, we kind of make it a point not to draw stuff that's comic related. That doesn't always pan out, but I mean, I know personally that when I get up there, I'm much looser and much sketchier with what I do because I don't care and I'm having fun. So yeah, we do that every week. He calls it the Lead Poet Society,
which I like.
And there is a blog for it, but nobody ever
contributes. Is it like
leadpoets.blogspot.com. Yeah. Or leadpoets.
I use Blogspot for Word Balloon as well. That's what
so,
I use.
And actually, the two times we attempted to do like a video podcast, we did a tease.
Yeah, we did it up there.
You guys have video examples. That's right.
We did it up at the drawing night. We recorded a video show of it because it's interesting. I know I go on YouTube every once in a while to find the process videos. You see guys drawing or coloring.
Yes,
stuff. They're very interesting to watch. So we figure we do that.
Well, I like that, and I'm glad to see creators use that to promote their stuff. And you don't use the Crankcast really. I mean, work will come up on your show.
Yeah, that's actually something.
It's just more about what you're doing.
Yeah,
hey kids, guess what?
I actually should do that a little more. I think I should promote myself a little more because I think some people are not necessarily paying attention to what I'm working on every once in a while. I should probably, if I told them what I was doing, maybe I'd sell a couple more comics. But yeah.
I also like the drawings that I've seen, because I'll come, and I don't draw because I can't, but I really watch because it's so much fun, and it's this great kind of challenge. It's kind of like the art challenges you see at conventions where somebody will, come up with a topic, and I know like one was 80s action movies.
Yeah.
And you're just freehanding doing Cobra, which was awesome.
Oh, yeah, I can't get that out of my head.
And Seeley
burned in my brain.
Tim Seeley does the alien from I Come in Peace. And
yeah,
we were all dying. I'm like, that's fantastic. That's right. A movie I haven't thought of forever.
Yeah.
And
Scotty did Bad Boys. It was really
That's
neat.
Right.
I mean, we got a bunch of guys up there that are, I mean, just really good.
Yeah, Greg Titus is there.
Greg Titus
from
is there.
Super Scroll for Marvel fans. Great, great artist. And Seeley comes, and Steve Seeley, Tim's brother.
Steve Seeley comes. Luke Smarto, who is a mini comics guy, who probably the first person I met here in Chicago. He's a really cool guy. And
a couple guys from Graham Crackers. Chris Burnham's been coming
Chris
lately.
Chris Burnham's been there.
I keep telling Doug Klauba to get off his ass and come from the
we've had
far
Mike,
south suburbs to come up.
We've had Mike Huddleston there and Jose Garibaldi there before.
Jill Thompson came one night, too, didn't she?
Jill Thompson came. Yeah, it's really cool. It's fun. I look forward to it every week, and it was a really good idea, I think.
Yeah. And it was cool because I know with the New York Comic Con, Chris Niesman from Around Comics got the good idea of like hitting you guys up and saying, hey, do a bunch of sketches for Hero Initiative.
It broke our comic book code, though. We didn't want to draw comics.
But it turned out nice, and you guys made
Chris,
some nice money for the Hero Initiative.
Yeah,
which
yeah,
was
we
really
were
nice.
Glad. I mean, it was half of us you know, don't like that rule anyway. So.
Well, I liked you had the, was it the koala bear that was eating people or the panda bear that was eating people?
A koala. I've always drawn man-eating koalas since I was in college. I don't know why I do that.
and the clown, the scary clown sitting on the pyramid of skulls, I thought was a really good image as
that
well.
That was something, I think, that was like Fears or something like that. That was an interesting one because we'll have nights where we all write for this night, it, for example, was Fears. Everybody would write a fear on a piece of paper and put it in a hat. We'd all pick one out.
Oh, very nice.
So I got clowns. Which I still don't believe is really a legitimate fear. I don't think people are actually genuinely scared of clowns.
I was when I was 4.
Well, you know.
Cesar Romero on Batman scared the shit out of me.
Yeah, I never understood clown fear. Clowns are dumb, granted. Like, they're big and goofy.
But if they're loud
like,
and screamy and they got the crazy fucking eyes.
The scariest thing about Cesar Romero as the Joker was the painting over the mustache.
Yeah.
That's creepy. Well, then, that automatically makes you think, there's something going on there. He is somebody else when he takes off that makeup. But, you know, and that's the whole point of clown makeup is that you're this little character.
I mean, if somebody was acting like that in your face without makeup, that would be scary.
You don't think Heath Ledger looks scary?
But he's all scarred up.
He's scarred up. He's got big cut marks on. That's not just a clown.
He's totally going for the disturbed elements.
What was that?
Of the Joker,
was that Chicago clown?
Lombardo.
The famous clown?
You mean Bozo.
Bozo.
I'm thinking Bozo. The lobster, Joey the Clown Lombardo. And, you know, because that's where we all ate a clown.
Yeah,
now
that's
you're talking
about
Joe Lombardo, obviously, over by there.
No, I mean, like Bozo. Who the hell would be afraid of Bozo, you know? I mean,
and ironically, I love Bozo because you're right.
Who doesn't love Bozo?
I was on Bozo Circus as a 4-year-old child.
Wow.
It's true.
Look at that.
It's true.
For some reason, I want to say I was on no, I wasn't.
Were you on no Cincinnati local kid show?
I was going to say what was it, Mr. Green Jeans and Uncle
Captain
Al?
Captain Kangaroo?
Captain Kangaroo. We didn't have a Captain Kangaroo. We had Uncle Al, which was like like another
one. We couldn't afford Captain Kangaroo. We had
I remember watching Captain Kangaroo. For some reason, I want to say I was on like Uncle Al when
I'm
I was
waiting
a
for him to get to the part where this wasn't even a show. It was his actual Uncle Al.
Oh, I thought it was going to be something.
Who did his own podcast, quotation marks.
I thought it was an incident at the park or something like that he was just like dredging up. Wow.
I saw it on a TV show. That's what it was.
That never happened.
Yeah, that wasn't me. That was Bobby Brady.
Sorry. I totally got that mixed up.
Moving on.
It's funny. I was just talking about my last interview with Tim Bradstreet, and we've discussed lightboxing before. Yeah. And I know you have done a bit of it at Devil's Due with some stuff for Hack Slash.
Yeah. Yes. I've done some covers and stuff. It started out as just like a joke where we were...
Why was it a joke?
Well, it was me and Tim sitting on a train platform at the L, like waiting to go somewhere. And it was when The Punisher was out and those posters were up that Bradstreet did.
For the movie.
Right. And I had been sitting
there like... I didn't
know
that's how that started.
Yeah, I had been sitting there making jokes anyway because like at that time it looked like... it was looking like Bradstreet was doing just a little more literal tracing than the more arty stuff he had been doing a few years prior. And I was making a joke about it and I was like, man, you know what, dude? I'm going to do a cover for the next Hack Slash. You know, I'm just because like I can see exactly how he did that, like in my head, like how it was performed technically.
Yeah,
I'm like, oh, so I'm gonna do this cover, and then and Tim was like, all right, yeah, and I think we both been drinking a bit anyway.
Do it. That sounds great.
I was like, yeah, all right, and so like I did, and we are, I used Mike. And this girl named Sandra.
Yeah, that's right. He dressed me up in coveralls and a gas mask.
Where have you got a gas mask, Dahmer?
Well, he's got a couple.
I've got several gas masks.
All right, good to know. God, that's like Grad Street with his weapons and shit. That's scary. Go ahead.
I've got lots of prop guns, too. But, and I used Mike and this girl named Sandra from Florida, who we had met at a con. And she's been Cassie a couple times on the covers. But, and I sat down to do it, and I went from making fun of Bradstreet to going like, oh, Jesus Christ, this is hard.
Yeah. Not as easy as you thought, eh,
yeah,
smart
exactly.
guy?
Yeah, I mean, because it's not – I'm literally more of a tracer than he is because all I'm doing is like photo manip kind of stuff where I am adding line work to it, you know, and I'm layering that over top and then I'm layering in some like colored stuff and you know, mix and mashing and collaging like different pieces into one
certainly.
Big piece.
Certainly,
like, obviously, I didn't have Mike and Sandra in the same place, so, you know, I had to, like, get the lighting right and fit them and then create shadows and do things like that. And I'm just like, God damn, this is a lot of work.
There you go.
So I went from sort of belittling Bradstreet to going like...
appreciating.
Yeah, appreciating the amount of work he has to put into something.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, it's no different than someone saying, well, I just, you know, outline a pencil of a human form and hand it off to the inker and he details it a little bit better. Yeah, it sounds easy. The basics sound simple, but then when it comes to the execution, therein lies the art. And I think some people... don't realize that. I'm glad to hear that.
And I will in no way claim that I am anywhere near that level. I'm not, you know.
So no, I well,
I'm not saying it like, you know, I'm this like great artist guy or anything.
I do think people think anyone can do it, and it does look easy. But then it's the obvious answer is, well, then go ahead and do it. You tried, and I'm glad to hear that because I think
a lot of people get killed saying that sometimes. That looks easy,
and then
they go to the hospital.
You can't do that on television.
Yeah, exactly.
Or what's that? What was the Fox show?
Oh, which one is that?
The one where they just showed like the worst sports accidents.
Oh, I don't know. Like when animals attack and stuff like that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Most outrageous.
Extreme grit.
Most outrageous boat accidents and stuff like that.
No, I think I did actually go to the hospital, but that was just for frustration.
Okay.
You know,
how does he do it, doctor?
What the hell am I supposed to do here?
I really don't know.
Yeah. Anyway.
Conventions. We're in convention season now. Where are you going this summer?
The only ones I'm doing so far are Wizard World here in Chicago and the San Diego show, which I actually just got my tickets for. I'm hoping I want to go to the expo that they have in Toronto in the fall, National Comic Con.
Yeah, that's the one that they split with the Rue Morgue for the horror thing.
I guess so.
Isn't it? No, that's at the end of summer. I'm sorry. That's like August or something.
It's in August.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's right after Chicago. Yeah.
Yeah, it's
the
one
end of the month.
It's like
the end of August.
They have like a big anime manga thing, and then they have like comic book stuff.
It's
and then
like
they
San
have like
Diego
a,
in Canada, basically.
And they have like
huge.
A big Rue Morgue horror.
It is a big show,
stuff.
And
yeah.
I've been to a couple times by myself and with Devil's Due.
I was there once a couple of years ago, and it was
it's
like a lot of
really
fun.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of cool people in Toronto. Just in
you
general.
Get those weird gravy fry things.
It's a great city.
Yeah, no, I really want to go. I can't this year, but I hope to in the future.
I may go to Mid-Ohio Con. I kind of went last minute last year, so I might go this year. And it's not a convention, but I'm going to the Comic Geek Speak 300th episode. But
oh, that's nice.
It's kind of turning into a convention. They've got like 20 artists.
Oh, do they really? That's excellent.
Yeah, it's a huge thing going on in Reading, Pennsylvania. So I'll be going to that in September. So
lovely.
So that's about all my appearance stuff. I mean, I may be sitting around with DC at San Diego, but I'm really going to that as a fan.
I was going to say, on
the wind there.
You're not doing a panel or anything, as far as you know?
Not that I know of, no. Okay. I just got a plane ticket and said I'll let everybody up there know. It's like, hey, I'll be there.
So. How about you, Chris?
No.
just not even Wizard Chicago?
I probably stop in Chicago because it's easy to get there.
Right. It's down the street. I mean,
as far as everything else goes, it's just I got a lot on my plate this year, and you know, between like having other things to do and just the funds that it takes to travel all over the place like that, like maybe Toronto, just because I know I could drive there, you know, like takes maybe 10 hours or something to get there.
Yeah, 10 hours. That's a long drive, though.
Yeah, well, as long as I got somebody
else. I'll
take
the train with you. I don't know if I'm going to have to drive there, but I'm,
But, like, and, you know, maybe Mid-Ohio, because it's usually around Thanksgiving. So, like, if I can arrange it to stop in for Thanksgiving at my house or, you know, see my parents in Cincinnati and then go up. But other than that, probably not. I really want to do San Diego because I haven't been there in a couple years. And that's always just such a mind blower. You know, it's like...
Yeah, no kidding.
Especially, like, if you're working it, you're just dead by the end. You know, you're...
I wanted to ask about that because I felt like a wuss the last couple cons that I've gone to because you're right. You come back. First of all, you lose that week going.
Yes.
And then you're dead the next week, too, and your ass is dragging from that. So it's funny how it's the announcement of all the new works and everyone that has to attend the cons ends up losing a work week to promote it.
That is my biggest problem with going to conventions because I...
Can you not draw on the road?
I know. I tried it once a long time ago and just decided that I can't do it. And, so it takes, you know, a good bit of work away from me, and I'm one of those guys that I think the reason why I'm able to do as much as I do is because I'm kind of obsessive compulsive about it. If I can't be sitting at my table for a certain amount of time a day, I get antsy and nobody wants to be around me because I'm being a jerk because I'm just thinking about the stuff that I should be doing. Now, I do that when I'm at conventions too, you know. That's only that at conventions there's so much going on that I can be preoccupied with that stuff rather than going, I should be drawing right now. But if you get if you sit down and have lunch with me and stuff, I'll just be going like twiddling my thumbs saying, I should be drawing right now.
I'm amazed at the artists that can do it and can work on their
role. Yeah, yeah.
And it's I think that's a great discipline, that self-discipline that they've got.
Because, there's really not a lot of guys that do it.
Well,
because, and the ones that, you know, maintain what a used to be considered a regular schedule are kind of like gods now, you know, in a way. And rightfully so, because, you know, they're upholding the tradition, and that's the way that it should be, you know. So guys like Mark Bagley and John Romita Jr. and those guys that, you know.
I know Colleen Doran says she can do it, too.
Well, she's been doing it. She never took a break. She's consistently.
Since she was a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, so.
And maybe that's just, why, because, she always did.
I mean, how many volumes of Distant Soil are out? You know?
Like nine. Yeah. Something like that. Yeah, seriously.
Just, and to do that for not any major company, just doing it on your own.
And she generally hits a lot of cons, too.
She goes to most of them that I know of, you know. So.
And that's doubly amazing, because, I mean, think about
plus
it.
Plus all the fantasy cons, the non-comic, like,
Lord
of the Rings kind of fantasy stuff, because, that's her
it's where you go to promote.
And, I mean, you got to think about it like this. I mean, a con, like, if you're working a con, like working a booth or whatever, I mean, you're spending probably not even 8 hours, like probably closer to 10 hours between, like, getting there early, breaking, you know, setting up, breaking down, stuff like that.
Yeah, and that's true, too.
You're spending 10 hours working, because you are working. You're on. You have
retail
to be on.
Kind of working, like
where you have to be like nice to
on
people.
Your feet.
As he
like,
smiles,
talk to people, and you have to do stuff. And
how come GI Joe is like it is now?
It's like
that is the question. That's the question.
Well, I was younger then. I'm sorry. It was a dumb question when I asked it. But.
So like you spend 10 hours or whatever working the con, and then like. If you're lucky, you can go back to your hotel room if you got something to do and like maybe crank out some work for a couple hours. But then you still have to like associate with other people like at the bars or whatever, you know.
Right.
And it's going to something like San Diego, which if you're working at the full show is like almost a week.
It is a week. It's you go from
Wednesday
through Sunday, and most people get there either Tuesday or early Wednesday and leave on Monday. So it's pretty much a week.
And, you know, it's amazing anybody can get anything done, like, at a show like that, you know, because it's just
They don't. I don't know of anybody that gets stuff done while they're there.
Yeah. Not that kind of network. You can network, obviously, while you're there justify it as well.
I know artists that will do commissions while they're there. They'll go back to their room and they'll do commissions. But nobody's doing, like, their work.
Right.
I've been to shows where you'll see, like, Brian Bendis in the hallway, he's going up in the elevator. He's like, I got to go work on something right now. You know, he's not the one. He's not out.
Right.
He's doing stuff.
Loeb too.
Yeah, writer. Loeb's a guy like but it's that easier too, for a writer to take his laptop and he's just like, I got to go to the hotel and I'll finish off some scripts and stuff like that. You got to take. I mean, art isn't necessarily the most portable thing. So you gotta have all the equipment.
Yeah, that's
and all
well,
this
that's
stuff.
The other thing. And again, that's why like people like Colleen. It's like, oh, how the hell do you do that?
Yeah, I don't
how
know.
How the hell do you do that?
I don't know.
So.
That's
can you imagine like losing pages like in security or something, you know, baggage or some shit like that?
It's never happened to me, and I don't like thinking about it.
All right, good. So there's a Rod Serling fear moment for
you. Well,
you
know, I just recently had my car stolen, and I know there was something in there, but I don't know what it is, and I'm waiting for the day where I'm going through my page and say, God dadgummit, that's what happened.
That was my favorite page, too.
My favorite page.
Yeah.
Damn it. Yeah, I just don't think about it until actually... You know, comes up.
Well, I'll be at San Diego and Chicago because, of course, it's our backyard.
Yep.
And that's probably it. I keep thinking about Mid-OhioCon.
Mid-OhioCon?
I want to see Mid-OhioCon because they moved.
Again. They moved.
You know?
Now, you guys have talked about on the Crankcast how much you love Mid-OhioCon, too.
It makes it sound like I don't like it now. I used to love that show. I used to go to it, pretty consistently, and then I stopped. Oddly enough, when I moved to Chicago, because it wasn't as convenient to get to, but they just recently moved back downtown because they built up downtown in Columbus a lot. And
you told me that.
I think they had a couple little growing pains from that situation, but I think next year they'll probably be back on track because it is an institution down there. I mean, they've had it for as long as I can remember.
Are you doing New York next year?
Oh yeah, the New York show is fantastic.
They're moving it to April, so I'm going to do it.
Oh,
too.
It's in April now.
Yeah,
oh.
Nobody wanted to go. Nobody wanted to go to New York in the dead of winter.
Gee, I liked it. I mean, sure, it's cold, But that's what I figured.
Well, cold's fine. It's the threat of snow. Yeah, that's what they're scared of, is getting stuck.
Yeah,
because
that was
a
problem getting back and all that stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah, I know. B. Claymore told me, he's like, dude, I'm so glad you gave me that Sweeney DVD. He goes, I've been sitting in the airport for 4 hours watching it.
Yeah, right.
It's like, that's another one I really like to hit, just because, I mean, I've never been to it, and it seems like a lot of fun. I don't know, you know, it seems crazy almost. Like,
compare this year to last year, Mike. I wasn't there this year. I was there for the first one.
The New York, they were, you know what? It felt like the same amount of crazy. It's just that they opened it up a little bit for you, so it wasn't as annoying.
Okay, yeah, that's good.
Because the first year, it was just you knew this show was awesome. It was just
crammed in a very small space.
Packed into this too little space, and that can become, I mean...
And literally, it obviously, as people know, they locked down the room on Saturday.
Like, yeah, the editor-in-chief of DC is arguing to get into the show. Yeah. You know something's kind of wrong. You know, maybe you're just like, oh, I can't believe they're not letting me in. And but they fixed most of that this
year.
That's
good.
There were a couple of hiccups here and there, but, I mean, it was a noticeably... a noticeable improvement over last year. So
that's cool.
Next year, I can only imagine will be better.
And I think bigger too. Again, because it's going to be springtime.
Yeah,
it's going to be the end of April.
Something a little closer to home. What do you think ChicagoCon's going to be like this year since they closed Knuckles?
That's true.
The bar.
That was the one bar everybody would filter over to and overflow.
Yeah, because it pretty much it was just down the street from the convention center, and it was at one of the hotels right there. And there isn't really. I mean, there are other bars, but they're nicer bars. I mean, that's the thing about Rosemont. Rosemont, it's like they were hoping to get a casino license, so all these high-end restaurants kind of moved into the immediate area around the convention center, anticipating a casino that never happened. And I don't know. I don't know where we're going to end up. Kiosk? Or I guess actually another area that I've noticed was really outside of Knuckles, and that restaurant kind of open area.
Yeah, that whole thing has gotten progressively crazier and crazier since I started going. And I started going to the show in '97, and I never liked Knuckles. I had to be honest.
No,
with you.
No, I mean, by the time you get in there, it's too crowded.
If you could get a table at Knuckles, it was fine. But you had to get there seriously at 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
You had to send
an
advance party over there to stake out.
It was seriously like standing outside of a hip nightclub that they wouldn't let you in because it was so packed inside. And it was just like, there's only comic book guys in there. Why am I waiting to go in there and not be able to breathe from all the smoke and? And then so it started moving out into the lobby, and you know, that's kind of cool because you get to see everybody. It's kind of like a convention with liquor, and that got kind of cool. But as 10 years goes on, I get a little too tired too quickly, and it's like midnight, and I'm just like, I gotta go home. But I think they get in trouble there now. I think the hotel kind of is coming down on guys staying out so late. But I don't know.
That's the weird thing about Rosemont is always. Like, it's pretty close to, coming into the city,
It's just outside. It's just north of the city.
It's 20-minute drive, maybe, on the highway. Yeah. But you can never convince anybody to come into the city.
Nobody wants to come into the city.
I know, which is, Rosemont, and I feel terrible. It's like, guys, you're missing the city. I mean, this is Rosemont. This is nothing.
Downtown. Not even going.
Some of the cool people know.
Not even going all the way downtown, but even coming into, this area,
Well, that's true, too.
In the north side type of area or whatever. Yeah. And it's like... Whereas you got San Diego, where you pretty much walk out of the convention center, you can walk, mile up there, and you've got stuff.
Well, Petco Stadium is right there, so the Padres are right there, and
all kinds of restaurants, bars,
downtown San Diego
is
just gorgeous. It really is.
And here it's just far enough that people don't want to make that trek.
And again, like I said, they did beef up Rosemont with a bunch of high end restaurants and bars, but. I don't think it's in the comic book fans' budget if you're planning on buying that $500 statue to also, drop a buck 20 on...
Knight of Gibson's isn't probably in your future.
There you go, exactly. So,
and that's the thing I love about conventions is, it's not so much a convention itself. Yeah, you're going to see a lot of cool stuff. You're going to hear some cool announcements. You can get all that online. The real thing about, going to the conventions is the people.
Of course.
That's the only reason
going
to go.
Out after the show and, hanging out with people in bars.
Yep.
The only reason to go to conventions...
For a creator, I would think, is for one, if you make your money at these conventions,
which a lot of people do,
and two is to interface with people.
Sure.
Obviously, that's why you go. That's what the shows are there for, so you can meet people that buy your book and also the people publishers that you only get to see. You know.
Well, that's true, too. And I was also going to throw in, obviously, the business thing, too.
Oh, well, yeah, you can do business.
Scene and everything.
But I've never understood how that works. I know that that's theoretically how people get in front of people. And
you don't know anyone that's really like...
Oh, yeah, sure. I know tons of people that have. But for me personally, I think getting in front of those people and meeting them, I never had any work that came directly out of
a convention.
Like a lot of people.
An editor hasn't approached you and later, boom, you guys are doing a book or something like that.
Not necessarily. I've met lots of creators that I ended up working with and stuff like that. But I've never gone to a show and have an editor say, hey, this is what you're going to be working on and come home with a project that I've
got. That I understand, but at least that initial meeting that will lead to
work. Oh, yeah. Well, of course. I mean, that's networking is networking. But, I mean, I know guys that will go to a show saying, I need to fill up my schedule for the next 6 months and then come back and I'll say, how'd the show go? He's like, yeah, well, I'm working on this and this and this. And I'm like, oh, I guess it was a good show for you. You know, so it's that sort of thing.
Sure.
And me, you know, I'm completely more shallow about it because I'm not shopping art around. You know? So it's like... that's the only time I get to see people like Sean McKeever or like Jason Alexander, you know, or like Sherrard, you know. I never see Sherrard unless it's at a show, you know, and stuff like that, you know. And, I mean, there's some people local that I see, like Jose Garibaldi and stuff like that, you know. I'll see because he lives in Chicago and I'll run to him at a party or something like that, you know. But, like, other than that, like people that would live around here, there's certain people you just only get to see there. You know?
Absolutely.
It's like, and they're good people. They're good to hang out with and they're good to talk to and stuff like that, you know.
Yeah, even my couple of years, I know that I've already got – groups of people that I look forward to that I only see at conventions. Chris Moreno is a perfect example of that. And,
Chris Moreno is cool.
You know, and it, yeah, I mean, it's, seriously, there's a guy you always look forward to seeing him and stuff, and you know you're going to have fun and at least, you know, hang out and have a couple of drinks. Paul Story is a guy like that for me. And
Paul Story, you know, and Paul, yeah, Paul.
You know, so it's, no, it's not Clay and Han and all those guys from Kansas City.
And, like, these days, even, like, you know, people I used to work with, like Marshall. I mean, the only time I'd ever see Marshall would be at a convention, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it's like, for me, it's just like it's a social thing.
Sure. Well, and again, dovetailing back to the Crankcast, I think that's a nice thing about the Crankcast, that you guys, when you do have pros on, they're your friends. And a lot of times you'll even hook up digitally, and I know you did it with things like Skype, where Marshall was sitting at home and you guys are over here.
Yeah. So, we talked to like Jeremy Hahn and Marshall. Yes. And
yeah, we've only had a couple of people
Clay,
in,
I think, was on
here.
McKeever was on the phone.
Yeah. McKeever was in here once when he came up to visit. He's been in the studio.
He's what caused me to buy an air conditioner finally.
Yeah, you've been here. Scotty's been here.
Tim.
Tim's been here, and just pretty much everybody that lives here has been in. But everybody else, like Clay and Jeremy and Marshall, have all been on the phone. We have to do it that way.
No, you want to show? Well, check out the Crankcast. It's at crankcast.net.
Uh huh.
And, you know, of course, look for Mike's work, like Loaded Bible 2, which is out. Loaded Bible 3 on its way, and Mike's got a bit
of
work in there.
About half the book.
Okay. The Troma Anthology will have a story by Chris Crank, and, of course, Chris pulling levers at Devil's Do and making things happen.
I got a Hackslash cover coming out, too.
Congrats. What issue is that?
Issue 5 of the ongoing series.
Looking forward to that. Fantastic. And, guys, thanks a lot. This was great, and looking forward to seeing you guys on the convention scene and at Andersonville and various informal functions. But thanks for helping out tonight.
Oh, sure.
Oh, no problem, man. It's always good talking to you.
Two really good guys, Chris Crank, Mike Norton. If you haven't heard the Crankcast, do yourself a favor. Go to their website, crankcast.net. Check out some of the episodes. Two very funny guys who just get together and talk about nothing. This edition of Word Balloon is sponsored by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com. InStock Trades offers a huge selection of trade paperbacks, hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more. All at up to 35% off with orders over $50 receiving free shipping. And don't forget to visit InStock Trades' sister site, Discount Comic Book Service, at DCBService.com for all your pre-order needs. Major publishers are 40% off and monthly specials are 45 to 75% off every month. Visit InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com and Discount Comic Book Service at DCBService.com. Thanks a lot for listening. This is John Suntress. Don't forget, Word Balloon is all over the internet at Newsarama.com. We're available at iTunes, and by all means, subscribe to our RSS feed. That way you can get a new episode at any time, and also check out our archives of many shows. We're also at comicspace.com/wordballoon, myspace.com/wordballoon, and all the various podcatcher sites, Podcast Alley, Podcast Pickle, you name it, we're there. Don't forget, if you need to ask me any questions, I'm always available. john@wordballoon.com is my email address. And until next time, Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions. Copyright 2007.